Guys, for any of you listening on strictly the audio podcast, or for those of you watching YouTube and are slightly confused, it appears that I am echoing through Pat's equipment for unknown reasons. So I am going to mute him when I'm talking, which means he won't be able to interrupt me like the asshole that he is anyway. So that's fine. But that's going to be the plan. And we'll just kind of alternate back and forth here with our conversation on this week's topics. Now, I guess it would help if I actually had our topics up, Pat. I mean, I don't know about you. Seems like that would be something helpful. But I think the first thing we should start off with here is just updates on our personal teams, our personal league, because there have been, you know, some happenings here over the first month. We're officially a month, four games into the fantasy football season, and needless to say, Pat, I think things are going pretty well for the both of us. So if you want to start off and talk about your team a little bit, feel free.
Yeah, my team popped the fuck off this week. Like, I had, 167 non-PPR points. I scored more in that league than any of my full PPR leagues. Thanks to the wonderful boys of David Montgomery, Stephon Diggs, Puka Nacua, the Denver Broncos defense. You start a historically bad defense, and they give you a crisp 11. So that's the way it goes, but basically right now with my team, I did the zero RB strategy, and things have just fallen into place, like, perfectly, basically. Like, David Montgomery's been really good. We'll talk about that backfield. We'll talk about that backfield soon, and Isaiah Pacheco has been pedestrian, but he just showed Sunday night that he's more than capable of producing when given the proper role. And, you know, I was able to trade. I had an excess of wide receivers thanks to claiming Puka. And I was able to flip Devontae Smith for Jonathan Taylor. So now, like, if Jonathan Taylor comes back and is Jonathan Taylor, we'll talk about this more, then, like, I'm, like, this could not be going better for me right now. But that also just goes to show the fact that it's going to start getting worse. Something's going to happen to kill my vibe here. But I'm three and one. But I had a couple bad weeks, though. But at the ceiling, the team is there. But, I think someone's still undefeated, Bran. I don't know. Is there?
There is someone still undefeated in our league, and that's your boy. So I am not the highest scorer in our league. I don't think by any means that I have the best team in our league, but I have put together a very good team, and I've had, you know, a little bit of the schedule luck, a little bit of the points allowed luck here. So, yes, I am sitting at 4-0 atop our league, the last of the undefeateds, which is great. And, guys, look, it's very early. You know, both Pat and I need to continue to manage our teams well and, you know, just go through the ebbs and the flows over the course of a season. But it is not out of the question that we have an off-the-bench, you know, championship here at some point. Now, again, so much has to happen from now till then. But I guess what I could say about my team and why things have gone the way they've gone for me, absolute smash on Sam Laporta. Needed a tight end and found probably the best one that you could possibly get late, maybe one of the only consistent tight ends to this point, quite honestly, other than Travis Kelce in the games that he's played. Receivers, AJ Brown's come around. Calvin Ridley's been kind of here and there. I'm watching a dog take a shit over my window. That's pretty fun. And then running back-wise, Raheem Mostert has just carried me for the first couple of weeks. Obviously, I've talked about him plenty. And James Cook has been a revelation. So that is how I've been able to get to 4-0 despite drafting Justin Fields and drafting Nick Chubb, who has, you know, sadly ended his season due to that leg injury. So, yeah, I'm very happy, very lucky, honestly, to be 4-0. It's one of those things where it's like I'm taking the record I have and leveraging it because I know my team's not the best. So I'm looking at this record like, all right, I have some room to play with now, right? I can make some moves that maybe cost me a loss here or there but will set me up better through the length of the season, I suppose. And there's also a trade that I made that we'll talk about in a little bit that I think kind of reflects that. The spoiler here is that, guys, Raheem Mostert is no longer on my team. Raheem Mostert will continue to be a must-start, but for somebody else in our league. And there's a few reasons behind that. And we'll also dive into the Dolphins backfield here in a little bit. But I think just Devon Achane is taking over that backfield. There's really no two ways about it. And I just wanted to get something valuable for Raheem Mostert. And look, like, what I got for Raheem is another guy sort of in a timeshare, but a guy who I think has a lot more upside here throughout the rest of the season. Pat, I see you have headphones. I also hear myself echoing still, so I'm not sure it did anything.
Life is hell.
I'm not sure why it would do that. Am I coming through your headphones, though?
I can't hear you in my headphones at all. Okay. I can only hear me. Okay. I sound fucking great.
I love it. Pat just saying he sounds fucking great, waving to us now. Yeah, sign language for us, Pat.
I turned my setup down basically as low as it can go. I don't know if talk, Brandon.
Hello. Knock, knock. TikTok. I hear myself. It's much lower. I mean, folks in the chat, do you think we can deal with this? Is this brutal or is this like doable? Can you guys even hear? Because, like, honestly, if you have your headphones on a lower setting when you're listening to this pod, you may not even be able to hear me in the echo format, at least. So, I wish Brett was here. Brett's our mod, basically.
Brett is here.
It's better. All right. I mean, look, I'm okay with leaving it like this, and we will sort it out later, because, I mean, I don't hear myself bad anymore. So I think it's not.
I mean, we could always just roll and do the chunky back and forth with yeah, I feel like the quality of the product is most important here. So
said it's not great. All right, yeah, we'll keep going back and forth instead, and I will mute you.
I'll just flap my arms like a dumbass whenever I want to talk.
That's fair. Just raise your hand. I just muted Pat again so we can get back into this flow. All right, let's get into the news really quick here now that we've given a little recap of our teams, and we will do it in the only way that I know how.
I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I think I use that video / audio cue maybe once every month or so. But hey, when I use it, it's appropriate. The first piece of news here, obviously the most important of the week, is that Jonathan Taylor has been activated and could play this week. Still questions as if he actually will play this week, but it looks like he's going to be returning to the field sooner rather than later, likely for the Colts, as no trade has really materialized to this point. So Jonathan Taylor expected to be back out there for, you know, many teams, including Pat's. Pat, how are you feeling with Jonathan Taylor set to return here soon, and what are you expecting from him in the immediate future?
I mean, as long as he's with the Colts here, you've got to expect good things. I mean, look at what Zach Moss has done. And granted, volume has been a big proponent of why he's been so effective. But just Jonathan Taylor is like 10 times the running back that Zach Moss is. It all just depends, like, does he want to be there? And, like, if he wants to be there, like, is he going to cooperate? And, you know, like, is, like, something could go wrong. Could we have, like, an Antonio Brown situation? Well, I don't know if Taylor's that far into CTE, but but as long as he's in Indianapolis, that's the reason why I traded for him, because the scenarios I saw was either he's going to get traded, and wherever he goes, he would be the number one guy. Or stay in Indianapolis, who, one, he's going to be the number one guy in a team that's clearly committed to running the ball because they're doing it with Zach godforsaken Moss. So if you've stashed Jonathan Taylor for this time, and if he does come back this week, I think there are going to be a lot of really happy managers, regardless of where he ends up.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think Jonathan Taylor's a guy that if you've stashed him to this point, obviously you are going to be the one starting him, and you are no longer entertaining any trade offers, as you should not, Pat. I think you traded for him at sort of the right time, and there were still several games left in that suspension. So you were able to kind of buy low and, you know, play this game of waiting it out and seeing how it plays out. And how it will play out the rest of the season, I don't know, because as we know, Jonathan Taylor technically only needs to play, I believe it's 6 games to have his contract, you know, essentially count for the season. So could we have the phantom injury? Could we have, you know, something else pop up from now until, you know, the end of the season? I don't know. But I do think he's, you know, he's going to play to some extent here, probably or potentially as soon as week 5. The problem is that I believe this upcoming game, Pat, is against the Titans, who are just a absolutely brutal run defense. They've been killing people all year. So not an ideal matchup for him coming right off of the pup list. But again, they have not confirmed whether he's actually going to play this week. Maybe he gets a little bit of a softer matchup next week instead. But Jonathan Taylor is set to come back. Another player set to come back from an absence that we didn't necessarily expect, Jameson Williams. So this kind of came out of nowhere. We had a suspension reduction for both him and Nicholas Petit-Frere. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Titans offensive lineman. Basically, the gambling suspensions got reduced as part of an agreement, you know, going forward on how to handle the gambling suspensions differently. RIP Calvin Ridley had to sit out that entire season instead and not get any benefit of this. But Jameson Williams is coming back, or at least is eligible to come back this week, which nobody saw coming. Where I'm at with Jameson Williams right now is that, look, there's a lot of guys who are wide receiver stashes at this point. I mean, you've got guys that you may have drafted, like Jaxon Smith-Njigba or Jordan Addison, who, you know, they've had maybe flashes, or in JSN's case, basically no flashes. They've had enough, or at least enough hope for you to, like, kind of keep them on your bench and see how it plays out. So if you don't have a ton of those guys already and you're looking for a wide receiver stash, go ahead and pick them up. If you have guys like that and you prefer to hang on to them and see what they can do, you know, go ahead and do that, because I don't think you need to clog your bench with so many guys who are just like upside plays. But Jamison Williams is as decent of an upside play as anybody. The receiver depth is not much beyond Amon-Ra St. Brown, and obviously Sam Laporte has become a pass catching priority there. But Jahmyr Gibbs has not been what we expected him to be, and Jamison Williams, you know, he's been in the league a couple years. That's the difference between him and a guy like JSN, is he may be able to leverage some of that league experience into actually being productive this year, or he could just be a deep threat who just kind of pops up here and there. Pat, how are you feeling about Jamison, and what would be your move if he was available in your league, which I think he's available in our league?
Well, first of all, just to mention, Calvin Ridley still would have sat out a year because what he had the Falcons in a parlay, I believe. So they still said it's still at least 1 to 2 years for a team, so he didn't get hosed that bad. But yeah, I actually own Williams in a couple leagues, and I drafted him in ours, but obviously, you know, he was the first person to cut when I needed, you know, when I needed a reinforcement somewhere. I couldn't help but notice you're drinking some Coke Zero, Brandon. Real Coke taste without the calories.
We're not doing this.
Okay, sorry, back. But that's basically what he is a flyer. But like you said, he's as good of a flyer as anyone. We saw him last year. Even the games where he had one catch, it would be like 60 yards and a touchdown. Like, that upside's great, but he's not someone that's consistently going to be in your lineup. I think even once he gets reacclimated, and who knows how long it's going to take, Dan Campbell has clearly shown us, hello Jahmyr Gibbs, that he is willing to play the long game in terms of getting guys acclimated to getting acclimated to the system. And again, Williams hasn't really played a whole lot in the NFL, but if he's available and you have the bench space, go get him. I see no reason not to go get him. And what's the worst that could happen? He's inconsistent and he's sitting on your bench, or you drop him? Like, that's really the worst that could happen. So I don't see why you wouldn't take the flyer, regardless, like, whether even you're good at receiver or not. Why the hell not?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's as high of an upside play as you can kind of get at the receiver position, so I would definitely see taking a flyer on him. But again, I feel like from my perspective, and there's going to be some teams that are set up like this, it's like you have so many of these flyer guys on your bench that you just can't take on. You can't take on another project. It's like a dad just having a bunch of project cars near his garage. It's like, I cannot take another broken, maybe it'll work out sort of player. So if that's where you're at with Jamison Williams, I understand that as well. I think my ultimate prediction for him is that, look, he could be a high-ceiling flex play. If it all clicks, but I'm not expecting consistency from the guy. I mean, we've seen a couple of flashes from him here and there, but I think just with the weapons that have emerged in Detroit, like, I don't think Jamison Williams coming back is going to make any sort of dent in Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't think it's going to particularly affect Sam Laporta with how we've seen him play. And I mean, look, Jahmyr Gibbs' role could still expand. I mean, he is a rookie. I know we've all been hoping for more from him here early on, but his role could expand, and that doesn't leave a lot for Jamison Williams. Now, is there a chance that Jamison Williams is just maybe the best talent on this offense? Yeah, that's not impossible at all. This is a receiver from Alabama. He could end up better than Amon-Ra St. Brown. But is that going to happen this early? Probably not. Is it going to happen at all? I mean, that's not really a great bet either. It's a possibility. So, you know, if you want to take that stab at him, feel free. If you don't feel like you have the room, I understand that as well. And the final piece of news here, kind of the one, you know, I guess one of the last big ones, is Kenny Pickett has a knee injury that is not serious, but he may miss this week versus the Ravens, considering they have a bye week after this. When he went down versus the Texans, it looked very scary, limped pretty heavily off the field, and we were like, man, this is a tough break for the Steelers, who are already not playing very well early on. The last thing they need is for Mitch Trubisky to come in there and just be the guy the rest of the year. But it looks like Kenny Pickett is not going to miss too much time. And honestly, Pat, I'll let you talk on the subject in a second, but I don't really even think there's anything actionable here. The Steelers were just kind of bad with him. They would have been bad without him. The only thing I would say is that, you know, look, I have the Ravens defense. I'm going to feel pretty good about playing them this week, no matter what happens, because it's either going to be against a less mobile Kenny Pickett, who's not going to be able to maneuver out of the pocket, or it's going to be against Mitch Trubisky. But otherwise, I don't really think this affects too much.
Yeah, they've just been really, really, really mediocre. I mean, we kind of talked about how we both thought they would take a considerable leap, but I just think we underestimated Matt Canada's incompetence, because he has just been absolutely miserable for that team. And there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent. You know, despite how much we clown on Najee Harris, you know, he's at least a solid running back with Jaylen Warren and George Pickens. The Muth. Oh, man, I whiffed on the Muth. Sorry, everybody. But, yeah, I don't think it makes a big difference whether it's Kenny Pickett or Mitch Trubisky. They've just been so bad. Like, that was, you know, the Steelers didn't score. I was watching Red Zone on Sunday, and I barely saw any of that game because they weren't doing shit. The only time I was seeing it was when Nico Collins was doing something. So, like, yeah, if you've got Trubisky, or, you know, if you've got guys, you know, if you've got George Pickens, basically, really George Pickens, I feel like, is the only kind of relevant guy here. If you've got George Pickens, you're doing the same thing, and I think the same thing is you're sitting him unless you're in a considerably better situation to do so.
Yeah, I mean, there's just not a lot to like with the Steelers right now. I mean, I guess, you know, Jaylen Warren has looked good in spurts, but again, with Matt Canada still leading the way, I don't know how you get excited about really any piece of this offense, and now that you've got the quarterback banged up, that is just even more true. Let's move on to just some monster performances from this week, because, Pat, there were a shit ton. I mean, I felt like I saw more 30-plus point PPR performances than I've seen in kind of a long time in the same week, and you had a lot of them, which is why you scored 167 points. Okay, guys, for reference, the record in our league for most points in a single week was 175, I believe. I'm like 99% sure that Pat is second now all time in total points. I think you have to be.
I don't know why I thought it was more than that. I didn't really think I was close at all. Oh, my God. Oh, that's brutal. That's brutal.
Yeah, you were stepping right on the doorstep of that. And I saw that you were like 20-ish short of it when Isaiah Pacheco, or 20-something, maybe 30 short of it when Isaiah Pacheco kicked off. I was like, I don't think he's going to get it. And then Pacheco started, you know, stomping on the ground like he fucking hates everybody, like he always does when he runs the ball. And I was like, man, this could actually be a possibility here. But fell just short, 8 points short. I'm going to unofficially say that you've got the second most points ever. But some of these monster performances, just to shout them out. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, 48.7. David Montgomery, 34.1. A.J. Brown, 38.5. Stephon Diggs, 36.0. Nico Collins, 35.8. Puka Nacua, 31.3. And Devon Achan, 27.0. Now, I said 30-plus point performances for most of those guys. Obviously, Achan is just below that. But I do this because I'm a great podcaster and would like to segue into a topic about just all these backfields with some, you know, levels of uncertainty in them, and one of those being the Dolphins and Devon Achan, who has just been exploding over the past 2 weeks. I mean, he is going just not unprecedentedly insane, but just nobody could have predicted this for a guy that was drafted, you know, in the middle rounds of the NFL draft. And I was high on him. I brought up this guy in the podcast right after he got drafted, but even I didn't see this coming, at least not this fast. But let's talk about some of these backfields, Pat. The Dolphins being first and foremost. So I, as a Raheem Mostert truther, I know he's going to remain involved, but at this point, Achan's the guy that you want, right? I mean, he's going to be the guy most likely to be the leader in this backfield if you're really going to tab a leader here going forward.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about it last week, too, that, you know, Achan was going to, you know, because even last week, like, Mostert was still out-snapped him, out-touched him, out-targeted, things like that. Gone. 1 week later, you know, we didn't know how long it was going to take. It took 1 week. The only thing, though, is obviously Mike McDaniel comes from the school of Shanahanigans, where you never know. There could be 1 week where you know, Mostert is getting more touches again, and we're just like, what the fuck is going on? But it also was remarkable that Achan was basically playing the Jeff Wilson role, because I believe there was at one point in the game where he had, like, three carries for 14 yards and two touchdowns. Like, before he even did a bulk of his damage, he was just plunging in from the one-yard line, which gives him all the more value. And speaking of which, I have not heard a peep on Jeff Wilson in regards to whether he's going to come back or not. So, yeah, but you will get to your trade in a minute. But obviously, dumping Mostert, I think, is the best thing to do in this situation. Nobody's going to trade you Achan if he's out there. You're not getting him.
I tried.
You know, you're going to get a king's ransom to get him. But yeah, I mean, the Achan stock is just going through the roof, and rightfully so. Mostert will still be kind of like an inconsistent flex consideration. But yeah, I'm getting rid of Raheem Mostert if I can at this point. But it honestly might be a little too late.
Yeah, it could be a little too late. I mean, if you waited a week too long, you know, this was obviously a really bad performance from Raheem Mostert. A couple of fumbles in that game. I believe it was 7 carries for 9 yards. Here's, I think, the most concerning stat about how this backfield is playing out, though. Achan, over the last 2 weeks, 10 touches inside the 10-yard line. Raheem Mostert, 2. Achane is not a big guy. He's not. And yet he is the one getting these touches when they're in close. And so, I mean, it just makes me realize that, you know, obviously Achane is the preferred option now in this backfield, even though Mostert's going to remain involved. And look, if you still have Raheem Mostert, he's going to be a startable player. He's going to be a guy who, at the very least, most weeks is going to give you flex value. Like, this game did not lend itself to the Dolphins running a ton. I mean, Achane turned his only a few touches into, you know, over 100 yards because that's what he fucking does. But they didn't attempt a lot of runs in this game because they were behind so much to the Buffalo Bills. We've seen this Dolphins offense. We know they're not going to be behind all that often, you know, most of the year. So, like, they're going to be able to attempt a lot more runs, and Raheem Mostert will be part of that. But it is clear that this is no longer, I don't think, a 1A, 1B situation. This is an A and a B situation, and Raheem Mostert is the B. And just, yeah, I mean, try to trade him if you can. Maybe keep trying to leverage the fact that he was the RB1 as of week 3 because of all those touchdowns he had. It did feel very wrong, I will say this much, to trade a guy who scored 4 touchdowns for me, to trade him like 8 days later. It felt dirty, but I did have to do it. And the reason that I did it, Pat, and I think you'll probably agree with my thinking here, I traded him for a guy who also didn't perform very well this week and who hasn't really performed all that great this season, but it is two guys who I believe are, you know, one is trending firmly up, one is trending firmly down. I traded him for a guy whose buy low window is going to close very quickly, and I recommend you all go out and at least make some sort of offer for him, and that is the New York Jets running back, Breece Hall. This is a guy that before this season even started, you know, the sort of injury analysts and people who are experts in recovery from the torn ACL that Breece Hall had, they basically said he could be back to full strength and full workload by week 6 or so of the NFL season. Well, we're heading into week 5. More importantly, we're heading into a matchup with the Denver Broncos, who, I mean, we saw what the Dolphins backfield did to them 2 weeks ago, and now we see what just every offense can do to them. Breece Hall, this could very well be his breakout game, and that is why I, luckily enough, was able to one-for-one send Mostert for Breece Hall, and I don't think that's an unreasonable deal. I don't know if that's going to happen in a lot of leagues because, you know, people know what a talent Breece Hall is, but from a production to this point standpoint, and from a touch standpoint especially, it's not crazy. Breece Hall just had 6 carries against the Chiefs, and would it shock me if he had 6 carries against the Broncos? I mean, no, because that's just more of the same. But I am banking on this trajectory changing, and I think Breece Hall is in for a monstrous second half of the season, which is why I went after him. Pat, what was your reaction when you saw that trade go through for me?
I honestly thought you could have gotten a little more for Mostert. You know, even with, you know, we talked about last week how he was like the biggest sell high guy in the league, and obviously, in a week after, you know, his touches went down. But again, you were playing there on the upside with Hall, and I was saying this to my friend the other day. It's like, when Zach Wilson is on, like, he's fine. But when he is bad, the dude is just miserably bad. But we've seen it twice now, against the Bills and then against the Chiefs, where he's looked competent, at least. But he's not just going to have, like, a dud where, like, just doesn't have a great game. His duds are going to be scorched earth, turnovers everywhere, 0 points. And I guess with that being said, that, you know, they could lean on Breece Hall more, and I think they're going to lean on Breece Hall more the healthier he gets. But yeah, the Broncos, they are miserable. Like, what you said is right, because I think he's going to have a big day. I like Jets to win that game also. I don't think that's much of a hot take. But yeah, this could be the game where he really explodes, because they just allowed multiple Chicago Bears to explode, and they are also miserable. So start him if you got him.
Yeah, this was a bet on Breece Hall's, you know, ever-increasing or hopefully ever-increasing touch total and health, and more importantly, Dalvin Cook looks fucking awful. Like, this is not a guy that I'm worried about taking a ton of touches from Breece by the time, you know, the season is in its second half, which is what this is a gamble on. And that's, again, this was a move I had the luxury to make because, yeah, Raheem Mostert could very well outperform Breece Hall for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks even. But at 4-0, this is a gamble I was willing to make. And, you know, again, we talked about how Mostert was that sort of ticking time bomb player. He's a 31-year-old running back who's never seen this type of production. And Jeff Wilson, to whatever extent he's going to play, is still lurking in the distance. And Mostert's losing his job to Achane. I felt like Breece was the guy to go get, because right now he and Mostert, you know, maybe on a similar touch playing field starting next week because of Mostert losing that job to Achane. Just felt like a better move to make. And if I'm going to try and find some kind of alpha running back to replace Nick Chubb, I think this was my really only affordable way to do that, because I don't know that I'm going to stumble into a star running back, you know, on the waiver wire at any point this year. I don't think Jaleel McLaughlin is going to be the next Adrian Peterson. Call me crazy. So this felt like a move that was going, Pat, this felt like a move almost similar to the one I made with you a couple years ago, where I traded for Saquon Barkley while he was injured. And it was just like, I am banking on this guy recovering and coming back to carry me when it counts. And that's what I think Breece Hall can do. Another backfield here that is very uncertain is the Detroit Lions. I say uncertain, except I guess it's really not. The certainty here is that David Montgomery is just the workhorse, gonna score all the touchdowns guy. I don't expect the touch disparity to be quite as drastic going forward. I don't think David Montgomery is gonna get 30 plus carries most weeks, you know, in games that are a little more competitive than this one was against the Packers. But it was startling for any sort of Jahmyr Gibbs owner or investor to see the first game David Montgomery comes back drops just a 30 burger of fantasy points, while Jahmyr Gibbs continues to just muddy around this sort of 9 PPR points. It is not good, looking good for Jahmyr Gibbs. Pat, is this how you expected this backfield to play out? Or did this, even as a David Montgomery owner, was this how you, I guess, hoped it would play out?
Yes, but not to this degree, because, like, I think the people that are shocked that, like, Gibbs is not getting these goal line touches, that aren't getting these short yardage touches, like, did you watch him in Alabama? Like, he that just wasn't the player he was in Alabama. And obviously the Lions knew that when they drafted him. They wouldn't have brought in David Montgomery. You don't bring in an established running back like that to, you know, ride the bench. But this much, like, at least it's a point where, like, they're killing the Packers. It's like, you'd think they'd be giving Gibbs, you know, the carries. Like, what better time than the present to kind of give him some of these carries in these traditional situations? But regardless of that, this guy's still so explosive with the football. And I just figured they'd be using him in his role more as kind of this change of pace, third down pass catching guy. You'd think they would just use him more in it, because the guy's a really good, really talented player. They wouldn't have taken him that high if they didn't think that of him. It's just, it's really confusing. I mean, we saw this on last year with DeAndre Swift, but the only difference is Gibbs is probably more talented than DeAndre Swift. So it's even more mind-boggling. I get he's a rookie, like, I get it, but to this extreme is really, really startling at this point.
It did make me laugh. I saw the meme of, it was like the old man in a plaid shirt opening up the same plaid shirt for Christmas, and it was like the Lions trading DeAndre Swift just to draft Jahmyr Gibbs. Like, they are using him the same way, where it's just constantly leaving us wanting more. And it really does make you question, like, what was with that draft reaction where they were so hyped to get this guy, only to barely use him? The only explanation for that is that he just has not looked as good in practices and in games as they hoped he would, so they are adjusting his workload accordingly. Like, maybe this was a guy that they were hoping to give a larger responsibility to early on, and this is a guy that's going to have to, I guess, prove to them that he deserves it here going forward. The Gibbs usage is surprising to me. I think where we're at with Jahmyr Gibbs now is you can bench him. This is not, like, he's another guy where, like we talked about Justin Fields last week, where it's like you can bench him and make him prove it first. And that may be the move here with Jahmyr Gibbs. The problem, of course, being, you know, running back pickings are slim. So you may not have a better option to bench him for. Maybe those 9 PPR points are good enough for you, because you're going to go out and get, again, sorry to keep throwing shade on his name because he is a waiver target this week, but Jaleel McLaughlin, who might just get you 5 points in PPR, maybe you have to keep throwing out Jahmyr Gibbs. But he is no longer a must-start player, and I think that's just kind of where we're at with him. You can sit him if you have any other sort of decent options, although I don't know a lot of people that do. Pat, a backfield we touched on last – oh, no, hold on. Pat has thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a dinosaur in a non-PPR league like us, absolutely do not start Jahmyr Gibbs. He has – very, very little non-PPR value. But if you're like a, you know, the rest of the world that plays PPR, like, basically the same, like, you can use him if you're desperate. He still has the upside, of course, but it's just like, is he going to get the volume to even have that upside? But, yeah, don't start a guy like Jaleel McLaughlin, or don't go fishing for someone else just because you're frustrated with the workload. But that said, if you have any ounce of a better option, use that better option.
Yeah, I'll say this. The guy that drafted Jahmyr Gibbs in our league drafted Tony Pollard in the first and then Jahmyr Gibbs in the second in a non-PPR league. And look, the Pollard pick is mostly fine. I mean, he had a down week this week, but his team is much less scary than I thought, because it was basically the upside squad, right? When you draft Jahmyr Gibbs in the second, it's like, man, if that turns into what we think he can turn into, which we had the comps to potentially rookie year Alvin Kamara, that is a scary combo of him and Pollard. And man, we are nowhere near rookie year Alvin Kamara right now. We are at Amir Abdullah level right now with Jahmyr Gibbs. It is not looking good. A backfield we touched on last week, though, with maybe a little bit of concern, was the Tennessee Titans with Derrick Henry. Henry had a classic Henry game this past week, 22 carries, 122 yards, and a rushing touchdown, and threw in one of his patented passing touchdowns that he seems to do once a year. He does have four total. I believe he's 7-for-8 in his career passing for four touchdowns now, so he's as efficient of a quarterback as you can get, but he's also an efficient running back apparently still, at least in this game. But Pat, my question is, was this just because the game script allowed him to do this? Because I wonder, is Derrick Henry almost a sell high? Because if he put up this stat line in a game where the Titans were comfortably leading throughout, how often are we expecting the Titans to actually be leading this much throughout any game this year? It can happen, but they took advantage of a battered Bengals team. Do you think that Derrick Henry is a viable sell high, or is that a bit of an overreaction?
I don't think it's an overreaction, just because he, you were right about the game script. And, but at the same time, it's like, if you have Derrick Henry, you've got to start him every week. Even say they're playing the Dolphins, and the Dolphins are going to blow him out. You still have to start him, just because we've seen two times now this year what he can do. Again, it's volume dependent. Yeah, if you can get someone who will kind of, harp on the name, harp on the ceiling, then I'd get rid of him. But I also don't get rid of him for pennies on the dollar. You need something really valuable in return if you're going to get rid of Derrick Henry. But this is really, really bizarre, because there was a lot of talk before the season that, like, he's already past his prime, quote-unquote, where running backs fall off. He's kind of like a unicorn, similar in vein to Adrian Peterson. And it's funny because, like, we're seeing that usage fall off, but we're not seeing the talent fall off. And not even the down weeks have had nothing to do with the talent. It has stuff to do with the game script. And it's not like Henry's incapable of being a pass catcher. They just must like Tajay Spears better in that situation. So I would, it's just the fact that it's going to be a pain in the ass to have a guy like Derrick Henry, because he's going to have these huge weeks where he carries you to a win, and then he's going to have other weeks where he drops a dud. And if you drafted him in the first or second round, you need him to produce like you took him in the first or second round. So It's in a bad spot. I don't own any Derrick Henry, so I'm not super worried about it. But yeah, if you can get the value, do it.
Yeah, I think it's a unique situation, much different from one with like Raheem Mostert, where look, most owners are going to know when they see Mostert putting up those huge numbers that it's not that it's fraudulent, but like it's going to come back down to earth, and he could very well become a bench player for your fantasy team at some point. Whereas Derrick Henry is a guy who, despite the slow start, somebody else in your league could look at this stat line he just put up as meaning that he's back to normal. Like, this is what we've seen from Derrick Henry for years. And if you are a Derrick Henry owner, I think that's what you should leverage. Like, you go to other owners, you try to sell high and be like, look, don't worry about him. Look what he just did in this game. Like, this is what you're going to see going forward. And that doesn't sound like somebody's trying to sell you something, It doesn't sound like I got a bridge to sell you kind of thing. It sounds somewhat realistic. So if you can get somebody that will listen to that logic and give you fair value for Derrick Henry, I would do that. I agree. You don't sell low on him by any means, because he can still be a very, very good player and anchor for your fantasy team. But I just think the days of these kinds of stat lines on a weekly basis are probably gone. And I think that's evidenced by the first couple of weeks where we saw nothing close to this. So I would potentially sell Derrick Henry if you can. Let's see, Pat, what do we got here? We have another backfield with guy we talked about a second ago to compare Jahmyr Gibbs to, the New Orleans Saints. Excuse me. Alvin Kamara comes back in his first game and immediately takes over 75% of snaps. He had 11 carries for 51 yards and 13 catches. 13 catches for 33 yards. I mean, it was dump-off city. Pat, what's your confidence in Kamara going forward, and what do you make of the 13 catches for 33 yards?
I mean, part of the reason why I think he was so appealing to people in the preseason, one, obviously where you were getting him because of the suspension, but it's that Derek Carr loves throwing to the running back. You know, we saw with Josh Jacobs, particularly 2 years ago, Josh Jacobs got a ton of targets and catches 2 years ago for someone who's not a great pass-catching back. And Kamara is one of the best pass-catching backs in the league. So the connection there is obvious. And again, whenever a healthy Jamal Williams returns, there will be some vulturing. Taysom Hill will vulture him like he did last year, and it will be frustrating. But if obviously he's not going to catch 13 passes a game, but I feel like his receiving floor is so strong. In addition to if he's, I feel like that 75% of snaps is only going to go up. I'm not worried about Kendre Miller. I'm not worried about godforsaken Tony Jones or whoever else is going to be in that backfield on a given week. But yeah, you held on to Kamara for this long, and I think he's going to pay off on your investment. You know, like, I don't see him like necessarily being like RB1 territory. Like, I think if anything, he, you know, a low end RB2 is what you're getting. But for what you drafted him as and what you kind of endured to get here, I feel like that's still worth your while.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a lot of this will also depend on if and when we see Jamal Williams back, because right now this is, yeah, Kamara is, there's no contest in this backfield, right? Like, Tony Jones is not going to present a threat. Whatever the fuck Taysom Hill is going to do on a weekly basis is not going to present a threat. So right now, Kamara is unopposed, running unopposed in that backfield. And for as long as that's the case, yeah, he's going to be an absolute monster, at least in PPR leagues. When Williams comes back, it could knock him down a small peg, but maybe, probably still not too much. I couldn't get over this stat. I believe I heard it on Fantasy Focus today, where for all of the NFL players to ever catch 13 passes in a game, the lowest yardage total before this past Sunday for Kamara was like 71 yards. It was somewhere in the 70s. So Kamara, the first player ever with 13 catches and fewer than 70 yards, and he has 33. I think it's just a reflection of Derek Carr's shoulder obviously not being full strength. I mean, there was question whether he would even play in this game. So it was just relegated to short passes at the line of scrimmage. I mean, look, Chris Olave, for God's sake, had one catch for 4 yards. So that shows just the inability to do anything downfield. That will not be the same going forward for the rest of the year. Pat's motioning, saying Pat's pals. Yeah, better days are also ahead for Chris Olave. Don't get me wrong there. But this was kind of a unique thing to get Kamara this many catches, but he's still going to be a guy who's very involved in the pass game. Look, 5, 6, 7 catches on a weekly basis is far from out of the question. I could absolutely see that. Pat, another backfield here that has just swung like a pendulum all year, and I'm curious what you make of it, is the Chicago Bears backfield. Look, preseason, we were all in. Pat's shooting himself now. So, guys, thank you for bearing with us with these technical difficulties. Oh, sorry, he's puking. My bad. I'm messing up his sign language. But preseason, we were all in on Khalil Herbert, right? It seemed like this was going to be his backfield. And then to start out the year, look, Deonta Foreman was kind of involved. And then the last couple weeks, it looked like Roschon Johnson was gaining on Khalil Herbert's heels. And now this past week, all Khalil Herbert. I mean, Khalil Herbert absolutely went off for 18 carries, 101 yards, adding in 4 catches for 19 yards and a touchdown. But here's my question. Like Derrick Henry, was this also just game script? And that's important to know because it's another game script that I think is going to be pretty rare this season. How often are the Chicago Bears, even though they blew it, going to have a 20-plus point lead in a game that allows them to run this much? Roschon Johnson is a guy who gets very involved in the pass game when the Bears are down, which they are down most of the time. So, Pat, how are you splitting this backfield now? I think, obviously, we're going to value Herbert higher. I mean, after a game like this, there's no question about it. But how close do you view him and Roschon now after this game?
Two words, Denver Broncos. Similar to what I talked about with Breece Hall, that defense is historically bad. They are terrible. And you could see it. The 4 Bears popped off: Justin Fields, Khalil Herbert, DJ Moore, and Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet had a huge game, 2 touchdowns, but I wouldn't touch either of these guys based on my puking thing right now. I mean, obviously, they're both very rosterable, and if you're desperate, and injuries, bye week start this week as well, you may have to play these guys, but I'm not playing either of these guys and relying on them to produce consistently. I still believe that Roschon Johnson is the back that you're going to want in this backfield long-term going forward. You know, you made a good point about the game script. You know, they are going to be losing. And he's a great pass catcher, especially compared to, you know, he didn't really get that Chance cares much because Bijan, he's not on our show sheet, but Bijan, good fucking lord, dude. But we all expected that. But he really couldn't show what he did at Texas with Bijan there. And even, I think the carries are going to start swinging in his direction as well. But, you know, it's funny because you're like, oh, wow, the game script was great. 20-point lead. They lost the football game. They lost the football game. I think you're hard-pressed to think that this team's going to win a game this year. Like, if I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to go winless. They may steal one or two, but like you said, this game script is just not going to happen. I mean, I guess Herbert's the guy you want right now, but even then, like, I'm not starting Khalil Herbert with any ounce of confidence. And I own a good amount of Khalil Herbert. We talked him up a good amount in the preseason. And I'm not touching – he's not touching my lineup unless, you know, injuries and stuff. But I still think, you know, Herbert now, Johnson – still moving forward. He's obviously not going to be available in any leagues, but if he is, scoop him up for sure.
Let me ask you this question, Pat, and we'll talk about the Texans receivers and some other receivers here in a second. If you were to get this trade offer, or if you were to make this trade offer, what do you think of this? Tank Dell for Roschon Johnson. Who gets the better end of that deal?
I want Tank Dell. Just because it's a better... We'll talk about it, but the Texans look good. No, well, you know... Not good, but for the expectations, they look amazing. And they're going to be consistent. Granted, the Tank Dell goes 1-for-16 after we're like, yeah, Tank Dell, of course, the week you throw him in your lineup, right? But I still think there's going to be enough to go around for Nico Collins and Tank Dell to the point where just the consistency, not only from the player, but from the offense. Because you, like you said, we're not going to see a lot of chances here. And even with Johnson's involved... In this passing game, like, how much is he truly, truly, truly going to get? And it may be a while. You know, like I said, I still think he's going to lay claim to that backfield, but it may take a while. You know, he might be one of those more league winner kind of guys, but fantasy football is a weekly game. You need to win this week. And I think Tank Dell is going to help you win more likely than not. So give me Nathaniel.
Nathaniel Dell. I love that these guys just go by Tank. I mean, it is a great nickname, so I don't blame them. Him and Bigsby both going by Tank. I fully support. We mentioned that last week as well. All right, let's get into the receivers then here. You know, we'll use that as a nice little smooth transition. We might as well start with the Texans. So I am personally a owner and investor in both Nico Collins and Tank Dell in our main league that I play in with Pat. Started the wrong one this week. Started Tank Dell, as Pat just alluded to. Nico Collins going for 28 or whatever it was on my bench. Fucking ridiculous. Here it's going to be a problem week to week now because, like, now I see them going up against the Atlanta Falcons, who, you know, A.J. Terrell just stymied Calvin Ridley, and I'm assuming A.J. Terrell is mostly going to be on Nico Collins, so should I just start Tank Dell again, or should I go with the guy who's had multiple 140-plus yard games now in Nico Collins? This is a game I'm going to have to play all year, and I don't exactly know what I'm going to do, but the lesson here is that if you have a chance to get either of these guys, or if you already have either of these guys, I'm guessing Nico's been owned in leagues, obviously, but Tank may still be out there. Go get them. This Texans offense is very real. It is very real. CJ Stroud looks incredible. And what's amazing about it is he has not turned the ball over despite playing behind no offensive linemen. That entire O-line is just decimated. I mean, he was playing behind the third string center on Sunday, and he's missing his best tackles. CJ Stroud, the poise that he's shown and his ability to support multiple fantasy relevant receivers has been nothing short of amazing. I think if you can invest in this Texans offense, as crazy as this sounds, do it. They've won multiple games now by 20 plus points. I don't think CJ Stroud or these two receivers are going anywhere, Pat.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to have a real two-horse race here for Rookie of the Year between Stroud and Bijan. They both look fantastic. And you know, Stroud did not get as much of the fanfare, you know, with obviously Bryce Young being the number one pick and Anthony Richardson, you know, with what he, you know, his upside, what he could do with his, like, Stroud, for being the number two pick, Stroud is like the forgotten man somehow, and he's looked fantastic. real life, or fantasy perspective, if you're, you know, if you took a quarterback who's not working out, like I took Trevor Lawrence, and I'm not thrilled, I would love to have a guy like CJ Stroud, not necessarily to play over him on a weekly basis, but just to have that option. But if you kind of whiffed on quarterback, I think Stroud is a very, very playable guy, and it helps. Yeah, Brandon's one of them. Hello, Justin Fields. But you really got one of the only flops from the top 12 quarterbacks there. The rest of them have been Kirk Cousins have been pretty good. So Stroud's a guy you want to have, and obviously if that offense is cooking, Nico Collins and Tank Dell are going to be cooking. So I also have leagues where I have both Collins and Tank Dell. I played the wrong guy last week. I put Collins in my lineup this week, and I'm sure it's going to bite me in the ass. So, but yeah, all aboard the Texans train, guys. And I mean, a really likable team to root for. D'Amico Ryans is a good guy. You know, really easy to root for, you know. After what a disaster that team has been, just an unmitigated disaster, it's nice to see them showing signs of life because they were a perennial playoff team. You know, granted, we're looking, you know, approaching 10 years ago this happened, but they were a perennial playoff team. So it's good to see them. It's good to see them coming back.
Yeah, I didn't expect there to be such a quick bounce back for this team, but there is, and I'm very happy to own C.J. Stroud as a backup in my primary league because I am a Justin Fields owner, so I am very much looking forward. I tweeted this earlier. Looking forward to playing this game of which Ohio State quarterback do I start, and playing that game basically every week going forward, because like neither of them have separated themselves as being, I think, the better fantasy start. I mean, Justin Fields at this point has the higher upside with the rushing, and you know they're going to be playing from behind all the time, but Stroud has just looked like the better NFL quarterback, which I think says a lot in itself, and being able to stack him with one of those receivers is just fun. And honestly, in a redraft league, that can also be statistically the difference, more so than just being fun. You can get a lot of points off of just one or two plays, and that can be a big deal in those leagues. Pat, this receiver conversation is very close to your heart. So you are a Puka Nacua owner. Obviously, he was one of the guy, or he was the guy that made you confident enough to trade away Devonta Smith and get Jonathan Taylor. Puka is as real as it gets. Puka is not, you know, just going to fade into the abyss, but Cooper Kupp is coming back. How concerned are you about Cooper Kupp? I won't say eating into to Puka Nacua's work, because it was Cooper Kupp's work to begin with, but how do you see this receiver room playing out now, and what are you feeling as a Puka owner?
I think the way to pose it is how much is Puka going to eat into Cooper Kupp's production rather than the other way around, because Puka's been amazing. Amazing. And it's funny, the funny name kind of got him on people's radars a lot, but a lot of people were talking about him, and he has shattered those expectations. I think it's going to be more realistically like the guy's going to catch 6 or 7 passes a game, and it just depends on what he does with that. Because Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford might have the best connection of any quarterback wide receiver duo. They're not the best, but they may have the best connection. I don't think any quarterback looks for someone the way Stafford looks for Cooper Kupp. But we've also haven't seen a healthy Cooper Kupp throughout the year in a while. So I'm not fully panicking just because of the fact that there's a good chance that Puka winds up being the number one again at some point. Obviously, hamstrings are super easy to re-aggravate as well. Probably the easiest thing to re-aggravate for Cooper Kupp. I'm partially not panicked as a Puka owner because obviously he's my flex. And, you know, if Jonathan Taylor comes back and works out, I also have 3 solid running backs. And also I have Chris Godwin. So, like, I have options. So, like, I'm worried a little bit, but I'm not panicking to the fact where it's like, sell high, sell high, sell high, because it's going down the tube. But it's also just the fact that I have options. But he's not going to fall off a cliff. But one, I don't think anyone thought he was, even if Kupp didn't come back, I don't know if anyone thought he was going to sustain this, like, he's setting records. He's setting records for catches in you know, your first games. But the Puka season has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't think this. I've seen a lot of people say like Puka's Linsanity run is coming to an end. I don't think it's going to be quite that drastic. He's going to continue to be the number two option or he's going to start to be the number two option. He's going to continue playing, you know, the entire game basically. And the only difference here is that he's not going to be the first read on a lot of, you know, routes and plays that he had been the first read on to open the year, because Cooper Kupp's going to become that guy, but that's okay. The one thing that's kind of, I guess, silver lining here is that Puka, I don't know if Puka scored any touchdowns so far this, or I guess he had the one in overtime, so he has the one touchdown. So there's not a lot of touchdowns that he's like, you know, it's not like he's been scoring these touchdowns and now Cooper Kupp's going to take them. So the production you've been getting from him has been strictly receptions, yards, and yeah, that'll take a little hit, but I don't think it's going to be anything crazy. I think if anything, this is probably just a major whack to Tutu Atwell's value, because while he's had a breakout season in his own right, you know, his work is going to go largely to Puka. It's basically just going to be swapping those roles. I think Puka's going to continue to be a very startable player in PPR leagues. He may have a few more duds if you are in a non-PPR league like ours, Pat, but I still don't think it's going to be a case where you're like, man, I'm really, really disappointed in what this guy is giving me on a week-to-week basis. I think he will mostly produce to a level that you are satisfied with. Pat, another receiver room that is personal to me, at least, and that we've talked about here, Calvin Ridley versus Christian Kirk. Now, this gets even more confusing because we wrote Christian Kirk off, or at least I did, a couple of weeks ago. I thought he was toast. Then last week he has a good week, and now this past week in London, in Andy's room slash London, so if any of you watch that Toy Story broadcast, Christian Kirk had 8 catches for 84 yards on 12 targets. Now, Calvin Ridley ended up with not a close statistical line, but in non-PPR it was close. In fact, it was better because he had 2 catches for 38 yards and a touchdown on a horrible broken coverage play, but that was only on 2 targets. So the target share for Calvin Ridley has been very concerning. Pat, I'll just say where I'm at with the situation, and I'll let you chime in. I'm getting a little worried because of the lack of targets in this game, and just, again, the lack of the first read targets. They've been diminishing. It seems like Trevor's been looking to Christian Kirk more. Call this copium, call this whatever you want. I am not going to make any judgments until next week and the week after, when the Jaguars play the Bills without Tre'Davious White in what should be a shootout game, and then they play the Colts, who do not have a defensive back to speak of. The reason I'm not panicking over this past game, not only was Calvin Ridley shadowed by A.J. Terrell, one of the best corners in the game, that man was his teammate for 2 years. Like, A.J. Terrell knows Calvin Ridley. Now, that's not to say that, look, if you're an elite receiver, you should probably not get bottled up quite that bad to where you only get 2 targets and 2 catches, 38 yards, but, like, we've seen it happen before. We've seen, you know, Mike Evans get bottled up by Marshawn Lattimore. That matchup happened this past week too. Sadly, Evans left with an injury. But like, sometimes really elite receivers do get bottled up by a really good corner. I'm not panicking unless he has less than, say, 7 targets against the Bills. And if he puts up more stinkers, I mean, this is 3 straight weeks now of basically 40 yards in each game. As long as he improves upon this in the next couple of weeks, I am not panicking on Calvin Ridley. I think the only thing this tells me is that Christian Kirk is going to continue to be relevant. But I'm riding the wave with Calvin. I don't think you're going to be able to sell him for anything right now anyway if you wanted to jump off the boat because of these bad performances. But I think there's really nowhere to go but up, and I do expect it to go up. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I think this is more so a greater indictment of Christian Kirk. You know, I put him on, I think he was my first pick in our sleeper, in all sleepers draft. And the main reason was just because of the connection that Lawrence had with him last year. I mean, granted, there was no one as talented as Calvin Ridley in the offense as well, but if you're a Christian Kirk owner, after 2 weeks, especially PPR leagues, that you can confidently start him. And it just goes to show how stupid non-PPR is to say that Calvin Ridley scored more points than Christian Kirk, because, like, come on. Like, come on. The guy gets 8K. Yeah, but I digress. But yeah, I think if you're a Christian Kirk owner, you can confidently, at least a lot more confidently, slot him into your lineup on a weekly basis. As for Ridley, like you said, you can't really trade him. His value's in the toilet. I mean, I think it's kind of going to even out. Like, he had those first couple weeks where he was really, really involved, and now he's had two where, like, he wasn't. I feel like it's kind of going to even out there, where, again, you've got to start the talent. You can't bench him yet. But if he keeps this up, he's going to get into panic territory, but I wouldn't put him there just yet.
No, and I think this will be the week that is telling for not only like how much Calvin Ridley is being targeted, but for this Jags offense and how friendly it's going to be for fantasy players. Because that game against the Falcons, I mean, the Falcons, first of all, they just play such disgusting football that it slows down the game. It slows everybody down. Now you're going to have a game against the Bills where the Bills just dropped a 40 bomb on the Dolphins. So the Jags are going to have to score to keep up with the Bills. Again, they lost Tre'Davious White to a torn Achilles, sadly, this past Sunday. So there is going to be the ability for the Jags to exploit that secondary, you would think. And if Calvin Ridley is not a part of that, then you can be worried. But I am not freaking out yet. I think he's probably going to have a pretty big game here against Buffalo, and then potentially another big game against the Indianapolis Colts. Pat, I see your note here. Michael Wilson season. He is a man that you've talked up. What do you got to say?
I'm shocked that this happened the way it was. Like, when I saw him score his first touchdown, I'm like, yeah, Michael Wilson. Then to see him do it again, I'm like, oh shit. Like, I drafted him and I dropped him, so now I'm like, oh fuck. Like, am I gonna be able to get this guy back? I need him back just because of how in on him I was in the preseason. I'll claim him. I don't care. I'll waste the claim. I'm never gonna start him, but I need him back. I think the big thing was just that his size advantage over the other receivers in that room, Hollywood and Greg Dortch and Rondale Moore and everyone else, he was the clear alpha, at least in terms of, you know, body type, skill type. And I think we're finally seeing that. And I mean, how about Josh Dobbs? Josh Dobbs has looked decent. You know, obviously the rushing upside helps. Like, he's owned in a lot of leagues I'm in, and I think he should at the very least be as a streamer here in the coming bye weeks. But if he can get that connection with Michael Wilson, where he can be getting these targets, because I mean, I don't see why he would stop getting red zone targets because of his size. But if he could keep the target share up, he's not going to do what he did every week yet, but I think he's someone that's going to be firmly on the fantasy radar. At the very least, someone you should consider in your lineup. But yeah, I was feeling good. So now he'll go one catch for 3 yards on 2 targets next week and just shut me the fuck up.
Yeah, you mentioned Josh Dobbs. I think Michael Wilson has just been one of the biggest beneficiaries of this offense being so shockingly competent through the first 4 weeks. I mean, Dobbs is playing awesome. This is proving to be, I mean, not a hotbed for fantasy assets, but it's not a desolate wasteland either. Even Zach Ertz has had some sort of usability in PPR leagues, at least because of all the targets he's getting. Michael Wilson, for this great stat line he had, was still third on the team in targets behind both Hollywood Brown and Zach Ertz. Pat, I'll say this also about the Cardinals. I just want to throw this in. I hate the fact that I have to eat my words on James Conner because I don't feel that I was wrong based on the process I went by. He's only good because the offense is shockingly good. Like, if the offense was what we expected it to be, he wouldn't be doing anything. But he is because of things that occurred outside of, you know, his own control. But I'll still take the L on it nonetheless. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think your thought process was correct. And I was in a similar, not quite as strong as you were. You hated the guy. But I also think that the people that were in on him are correct for those reasons. The fact that the volume, there's nobody else in that backfield to take touches from James Conner. And they're good enough. That was the big worry. Like, he's not going to get past the 50. So I don't blame you for the take. I had a similar take, but the people that were right on him should be doing their victory lap because they probably got him for dirt, except for the guy in our league who took him in like the third or fourth godforsaken round. Probably could have waited until the seventh. But but still, yeah, James Conner, oops.
It's just funny because they're right, but for the wrong reason. Like, I don't know of a single James Conner drafter that drafted him because they're like, well, yeah, I don't think the Cardinals offense will be that bad. You drafted him because you knew the offense would be bad, but you were like, I'm just going to get this futile volume, and it was going to work out. Worked out for different reasons, whatever. I digress. Doesn't matter. Pat, we've got questions about one more position group here. We're not talking about tight ends because it's just their tight ends. But quarterback questions. Couple of guys who are underperformed either this past week or just prior to this past week. Number one being Patrick Mahomes. I just want to touch on this because if anybody's freaking out, don't. I feel like that should go without saying. I mean, he had a very uncharacteristic Patrick Mahomes performance. We're used to seeing his floor being maybe 18, 19 points in basically every game. So seeing him with 13 was jarring, but it's the Jets defense. I don't know what kind of black magic they put on these quarterbacks. And look, I know their defense is good. I know the answer can be that simple, but I don't know what they're doing to just make these quarterbacks throw the ball directly to their defenders. Like, there were some baffling Mahomes decisions in this game. But if you look at the Jets' track record this year, I mean, they made Josh Allen look like an absolute moron in week one, and then they played Dak Prescott and Mac Jones. Mac Jones probably had the best performance out of those three up until Mahomes, so that says a lot. Don't worry about Patrick Mahomes. There is just nothing to worry about there. But the quarterbacks that I think we should be worried about to an extent still, Joe Burrow. We talked last week about how he may just not be himself all year, and Pat, we had another dud performance this week.
Yeah, it's officially panic time for Joe. If it wasn't last week already, it's officially panic time because people talked about, you know, Tennessee. Oh, Tennessee's tough against the run. They're going to have to throw. And he did have to throw, and he looked bad and laid a dud, and they laid a dud. Like, it's shot. You know, we talked about the Bengals as, like, you know, real contenders here, and they look awful in it. You know, unfortunately, it starts with Joe Burrow. You know, we talked about guys like C.J. Stroud. Jordan Love's looked good. Obviously, my boy, got to plug my boy Kirk Cousins. Like, if you were able to scoop one of these guys up and kind of be proactive and be like, oh, he doesn't look great, let's get a backup plan. Because in some leagues, it may be too late. It may just be too late to get a really solid backup plan. Because it's not like, you know, a lot of times you trade for a quarterback and package yours. I don't want Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is a worthless asset to me at this point in a trade. So you know, and then again, I guess transferring into Justin Fields, it's like, I'm not completely out on Fields. Like, I think Fields is going to be more of a week-to-week thing. But Burrow, I'm not, again, I said it with Fields last week, I'm not starting him until he shows us we can.
Yeah, Burrow, if you look into the stats, has basically the worst average depth of target of any regular starter in the NFL. And on a team with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, if that doesn't tell you that he's broken right now, I don't know what does. I mean, this is a guy that is just living off of these short routes because he can't confidently do anything deeper. Like, he can't throw the ball down the field. When he's in the same conversation, ADOT-wise, as Daniel Jones is, you know there's a problem. So he's a guy that especially, I think Pat's puking again, that you need to sit until he shows you something. The sad reality is he may not show you anything all year, and you may just be stuck with kind of this bench fodder. Because, Pat, I don't know that you can drop Joe Burrow either, knowing that a comeback is sort of – it could happen at any week. I don't expect it to, but I don't know how you drop the guy.
Yeah, you can't, just because, like, someone will take a flyer. You will not get him back. Like, you know, like, and even like if you're a Justin Fields owner, and if you think that, you know, you're kind of scared about it a little bit, you're going to take the flyer on Joe Burrow, because at worst he rots on your bench and you drop him again. But yeah, I, despite me being out on him for the time being, you can't drop him.
With how things are going for the Bengals, I mean, look, they're 1-3. The reason he even played last week was because of the threat of going 0-3. And I just think their best bet is probably to shut Joe Burrow down, start Jake Browning, start whoever. Except, I mean, look, it's tough to do this in week 4, and some, especially Bengals fans, I'm sure, will view it as an overreaction, but you probably have to accept that this is not a contending year for you now because of this injury. And just take what you can get and go for that good draft pick. Because, Pat, if the Bengals end up as a team that shockingly has like a top 5 or even top 3 draft pick, and they go out and grab Marvin Harrison Jr. and throw him alongside Ja'Marr Chase because T. Higgins is going to leave. He's not a part of their future. They've said as much. That's terrifying. And I don't even know what the league would do if they gave Joe Burrow that kind of weapon. Because when he's healthy, if he can throw to those two guys, yikes. But yeah, with Justin Fields, we'll talk about him now. This was an encouraging week for him, obviously. I did end up riding with him one more week, and I'm glad that I did, because he ended up with 27 points against the Broncos. I hoped that that terrible defense would lend itself to a good performance, and it mostly did up until the end in that turnover. For fantasy, it was basically no difference. 27 is great for a quarterback. My concern with Fields is that this was strictly because of that defense, and this week against the Commanders, I don't know how great I feel about it. I mean, the Commanders have been sort of league average-ish against quarterbacks. I mean, Fields, when he's looked bad, has just looked so bad that I don't feel comfortable starting him. How would you handle the situation?
Yeah, we've also got a question here in the chat, relevant here. I would go Fields over Burrow. Like, I feel more confident in Fields than Burrow, just from the sake that, like, we've seen that Fields has kind of a ceiling. Burrow has just done nothing. Like, we've at least seen Fields do it one time. Granted, I said the Broncos are horrible. But I would much rather ride a guy like Justin Fields. Oh, there's the clip. There's the clip of the week. But I'd rather ride with a guy like Justin Fields over Joe Burrow. But yeah, it's, again, I would probably go and get somebody else just to kind of have the option where it's like, if you're scared and say, hey, maybe you pick up a guy like you did CJ Stroud. Or someone who's going to be better, who's just going to be better consistently. But I'm not full-blown panicking. Like, I'm not at DEFCON 5 right now when it comes to Justin Fields the way I am with Joe Burrow.
The positive for Justin Fields is, if you believe that this performance was strictly because of a favorable defensive matchup, well, boy, do I have news for you. Yes, they play the Commanders, which leans a little more neutral. I mean, they haven't been great against quarterbacks for fantasy thus far, but after this matchup on Thursday Night Football, which honestly, Pat, the Thursday night part is kind of what's throwing me off too, because I could just see this being one of those disgusting Thursday night games where nobody scores. Beyond that game, the Bears will face the Vikings, the Raiders, and the Chargers in that order before having to finally face the Saints, who are a decent defense. So if you only like Justin Fields in soft matchups, well, he's got plenty of them coming up. So you can maybe honestly leave him in your lineup and feel pretty good about it in at least those three straight weeks.
And that may be what he needs. You know, he may need some soft weeks to have good performances, build confidence, get, you know, have the coaching staff have a little more confidence in him. You know, that may just be what he needs to kind of propel for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, the confidence will definitely go a long way. I do wonder, like, how confident is he feeling right now? Because he had a good game, but the Bears still lost. And I know he's a competitive guy, so it's like, how good is he feeling heading into this game against the Commanders? I feel like I just, as a Fields/Stroud owner, I just want to watch this game and see how he plays, how things play out with him without having any actual investment in it. So I think this will be a Stroud week for me. TBD, I'll let you guys know next week if I actually end up going that route. But those are kind of the quarterbacks that we had the biggest questions either from this week or from their body of work so far this season. Pat, real quick, we should touch on who the actual waiver targets are going to be this week. And it's mostly guys whose names we've already said. But look, waivers outside of Puka Nacua and Kyren Williams, I mean, there haven't really been crazy, I guess, Devon Achane. There haven't been a ton of major difference makers popping up thus far, and I think this week kind of reflects that. But these are guys who are at least decent flyers. I mean, we've got C.J. Stroud, Jaleel McLaughlin, Michael Wilson, Jameson Williams, and Jake Ferguson. So we talked about most of these guys. We haven't really talked about Jaleel other than me making fun of him. How do you feel about Jaleel's outlook, Pat?
I mean, if you are, if you're desperate and you have Javonte Williams, because it seems that, like, Williams is going to miss this week max. Like, he may not even miss this week. So, like, I'm not using a high waiver priority or using a lot of fab money on Jaleel McLaughlin. I'm not claiming. I put in my claims in my leagues, and I have not put in Jaleel McLaughlin. But the funny thing is, I don't think I put in a claim, and I've got four leagues that have waivers run tonight, and I don't think I put in a single claim. Like, the waivers are gross right now. It's gross out there if you're in any kind of serious league. But the Broncos have just still been so bad. Like, even if he is the starter this week, I'm just still not overly confident in his ability to really, you know, perform in a strong way. Oh, and they're playing the Jets, so that's why I didn't claim Jaleel McLaughlin at all in any league. So if you're really desperate, like you have Javonte Williams and your waivers are disgusting the way, you know, the way that most of them are, sure, but
Yeah, I mean, it's not a guy that I would feel remotely good about starting this week, but I don't think that's the point, honestly. I think this week can be a little bit of a tryout for him with a slightly larger workload if Javonte Williams does miss time, because this is a guy whose name has been popping up here over the first month of the season. I mean, we keep seeing him. We've seen limited touches. I mean, he scored a touchdown on I want to say, like, it was his only touch of a game a couple weeks ago, or one of his only touches. So it's a name that has been sparingly involved and sparingly hyped up. It's one of those, like, this may be as good of a lottery ticket play as you're going to get all season. So if you're needy at running back, go get him. I think everybody's needy at running back to an extent outside of a lucky few. I would take a shot on Jaleel McLaughlin. I have a claim in for him. I'm 12th in our league, so I'm not fucking getting him. But he's a guy who I would love to add in onto my roster because I am, you know, I basically have two starting running backs and nobody else behind them. So I think he's a decent enough dart throw at the very least. And then Jake Ferguson, the only other player on here that we haven't talked about. We talked about him a little bit in the preseason, just as, you know, we knew he was the tight end heir. He was probably going to be the guy there. And he's looked pretty good in terms of the workload. This is not a guy who's going to blow you away athletically or anything like that, but there are tight ends, it's a position that's so desolate that there are tight ends that pop up who you just want them to get that usage. It doesn't matter if they're going to break a ton of tackles. It doesn't matter if they're going to have a highlight tape by the end of the year that's actually exciting. But the fact of the matter is Dak Prescott is targeting him a decent chunk of times per game, you know, 7-8 targets in a game, and it's around the red zone as well. So if he's getting that usage, he can be useful. It's kind of just the Tyler Higbee, Dawson Knox type of role, Dawson Knox prior to this year, that is, where, you know, none of these tight ends are going to blow you away, but they're going to get that work, so they're at least worth a shot.
Yeah, so, and especially with how desolate tight end has been. You know, we're going to say it every week. It's rough out there, and now with guys like Freiermuth, who's been so mediocre, being out, you know, that's going to leave in, you know, like, guys that I love very much, like David Njoku. Like, these guys haven't really been performing, like, unless you got one of the tippity-top guys, and Kyle Pitts, God forbid. So, like, there's a lot of guys that were getting drafted as tight end ones that are not tight end ones. So why not you know, go and get Jake Ferguson, because especially in a PPR league, because just the volume is there at a position where anything that you could say in your favor is worthy of rostering right now.
Good enough is the motto of really any tight end that you're looking for. If you can get a guy that's good enough, you are thrilled. If he can get you more than a goose egg, honestly, on a consistent basis, you're feeling pretty good about it. All right, let's close things out here with our viewer questions.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
All right, first question. Pat, you just mentioned Kyle Pitts, and this question relates. Should Atlanta give Heinicke a shot? This question from Monsieur Graham on Instagram, ironically enough. My answer, yes, obviously. I feel like we're going through a little bit of deja vu here with the Falcons when we were begging them to bench Marcus Mariota for Desmond Ridder just to get something different integrated into this offense. But the difference there was we didn't know what Ridder was going to be. We know what Heinicke is. I mean, he's a guy who's going to at least inject some life into this offense. He's going to throw the ball. He's a more competent quarterback than Desmond Ridder is. I was cracking up. I saw this tweet. It was like, who's the worst quarterback in the NFL right now? And it was a graphic of four pictures, and it was Desmond Ridder, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and then Desmond Ridder again, and I was dying. So, yes, we're at a point now where Arthur Smith is going to go through his stubborn phase of sticking with Desmond Ridder for probably 2-3 more weeks. But then I do think we're going to get some Heinicke here eventually, and I absolutely think at least that we should get some Heinicke.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. They're rolling with him this week. Fine. Like, you want to, but if he's out there struggling, they have to make a change, because the Falcons are a team, as disgusting as it is to say, that has a real shot to win that division. Like, that division is up for grabs. The Bucs have looked, I mean, they haven't looked terrific, but they're getting it done. They've looked good enough to get it done, and obviously New Orleans is in a similar boat. This division is up for grabs, so you just can't sit there. And, you know, I was wrong on Desmond Ridder. Granted, I wasn't, like, super high on him, but I thought he would at least be competent. Wrong. So, like, and it's suffered. You know, Drake London caught a touchdown. I saw an old Mike Francesa inside joke about, like, how, like, a caller said, like, oh, do you think the San Francisco Giants and the New York Giants have dinner when they're in town? And it was like, hey, Mike, do you think Drake London went out for dinner in London after the game or something? But, yeah, the guy finally catches a touchdown, but the other thing is, like, we've seen Taylor Heinicke, like, be electric, like, in that playoff game they didn't win. We've also seen him be really bad. Like, he's a backup for a reason. Like, there's a reason he's not a starter in this league. But at this point, Ridder's got to pick it up quick, or it needs to be at least. And if Heinicke stinks too, go back to him. But at least see what you got, because you've got to start winning football games.
Heinicke, much like every backup quarterback, has that syndrome where it's like they will be nasty for the first like game or two that they sub in for, and then they'll come back down to earth. But the thing is, I think with Heinicke, his earth might be better than what Ridder's doing. So it's worth the upside. It's worth the injection of life into an offense that desperately needs it. I mean, this, I have referred to the Falcons as football terrorists, and I stand by that. The way that they play is so gross. I mean, Jonnu Smith, Pat, is this team's leading receiver. He is, get this, the only tight end in the NFL this year to have a 90-plus yard receiving game. The only one so far. I mean, that'll change, but he's the only one. And I also want to touch on this. You wrote off Jonnu Smith previously on this podcast, I remember. And he's here, and he's terrorizing us, and he's making Kyle Pitts bad, even though Kyle Pitts was already bad. What do you have to say in your own defense?
He's tight end 11 on the year. Like, that is absolutely insane that a guy with such – that is a backup is the tight end 11 right now. Of course it's coming from an Arthur Smith offense with – the best tight end prospect ever, which, again, he was that for a reason. This is a really talented player, but Arthur Smith just does not care, and he gets like, oh, let the fantasy guys worry about it like that. It's like, motherfucker, start winning football games. Like, you are going to actively lose football games at this rate in a very winnable division. Like, it's funny, though. Like, it's comedy. Like, I'm glad Arthur Smith is around just for there to be a collective enemy. Like, I think the league needs that from fantasy football players' perspectives, at least.
just this whole I'll let the fantasy guys, I make fun of it every week, at least in my own head, where it's like, dude, you do not have the standing to be able to say that. It's not like you are the San Francisco 49ers that are going out there and winning every week by any means necessary, while, you know, while George Kittle is pretty unproductive most weeks statistically. But it doesn't matter. Nobody bats an eye because the Niners dominate teams, and then Kittle will have his weeks here and there. But it's just like, dude, who do you think you are? What do you think your team is that you're such a just a cynical bum about that? I don't. The Falcons got to do something. I think starting Heinicke would at least be a good start. Next question: how long should I hold on to Jaxon Smith-Njigba? This question from Mr. Kevin Jones 4. Kevin, ironic that you asked this question. I dropped JSN this past week. It comes down to I don't see the clear immediate path for things to get better for him. The Seahawks have almost exclusively been running two receiver sets most of the games, and that does not leave any room for JSN to get in. And then when JSN does get in, the targets are just not really there. Here's what you need for JSN to break out. You need either an injury to DK Metcalf and or Tyler Lockett, or you need a sort of philosophy change where they're going to run three receiver sets more so JSN can get on the field. I don't see either of those things happening anytime soon. If you still have him and you don't have a pressing need for that bench spot, like if he's really your only flyer, I would say hold on to him if you can for the next 2 weeks, because they're on bye this week, and see if anything changes after the bye, because sometimes the bye week will serve to retool and re-game plan for things. We saw it with Isaiah Pacheco, Pat. He got named the starter last year after the Chiefs' bye, I believe. So this could be something that, you know, maybe he gets more involved. I don't personally expect it to happen, but that's the upper limit for this JSN experiment in my eyes.
Yeah, exactly. If you can drop him if you have a really tight bench or something, or you really need the space. Yeah, you can drop him. But what you said is very fair. But the only thing I would push back on that is that we know Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll does not come out with many surprises. But the only difference between him and Arthur Smith is that Pete Carroll generally works. Seahawks, you know, it's been a generally successful run he's had with Seattle here. And he's always run two wide receiver sets. He's always emphasized running the ball. And the crazy thing, the Seahawks, 10 different guys got a target last week. Wow. Including Geno. I didn't see this, but Geno Smith had a catch. Was that like a batted ball kind of deal where he caught his own? I don't know. It says he has one catch for -2 yards, which seems like he might have just like caught a batted ball at the line of scrimmage. I don't know. If anyone was watching that game last night in chat, feel free to jump in there. But that's the problem, is just that, like, even you look at, you know, Lockett's, you know, 4 for 54, 6 targets. Metcalf, 3 for 34, 4 targets. He did catch a touchdown. There's just not passing volume for 3 guys. There's hardly passing volume for 2 guys right now. Like, I'm not starting Tyler Lockett right now if I have Tyler Lockett. You're still starting DK Metcalf, but I really don't think the change of philosophy is going to happen. But again, you're just banking on injury, which obviously, of course, we don't root for injury. But, you know, if it were to happen, it would. That's what you need. But and part of me is like, why did they even draft him? But then again, it's not fantasy football. Like, Lockett's getting up there in age. Like, it may not happen this year, but this is still an uber-talented wide receiver who is going to be a very productive player in the league someday, but it's just not going to happen this year under these circumstances.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think we were all maybe a little surprised by the JSN pick, just because, you know, that is an early first-round pick. I mean, it wasn't their first pick because they had multiple. They drafted Devon Witherspoon with the number 5 pick. But to select a receiver in the first round generally suggests that you plan to use him pretty heavily, if not early on, eventually. And I don't know that the path is there for it to be eventually, meaning this season. It seems like this may be more of a long-term play. Like you said, Pat, I mean, Tyler Lockett is getting older, but Tyler Lockett has shown no signs of being any different of a player than he was last year, and he's shown no signs of coming off the field as often as he would need to make JSN relevant. So I cut bait on JSN. I would advise in most leagues, at least 12 teams or smaller, that you can probably cut bait for sort of a better lottery ticket. I would cut JSN for Jameson Williams at this point, because Jameson Williams is in line for a potentially higher workload, Pat agrees. So I think that would be sort of a bet that I would make. But yeah, JSN, it just may not happen this year. And then our final question, coming from our own Brett Daigle, who pointed out something that I did not realize. He said, your next win, meaning me, will be win number 100 in our fantasy league. So for those that don't know, our fantasy league has been going, I want to say this is year 13 or so. We've been doing this since high school, and we are all now well graduated from college. So this has been going on a while, and I'm about to come up here on win 100. Looking at our spreadsheet that Brett kindly keeps for us, my all-time record, 99-49. So pretty damn good, I will say. Much higher win percentage than basically everybody except Austin, who just joined our league. Pat, what's up?
Well, what's my record? I don't have the spreadsheet up right now.
Let's see. Pat's all-time record is, pardon me, 74-76-1. So Pat is just hovering under 500. How do you feel about that?
That's just mediocre. Not, you know, below average, but not terrible. And that tie was the infamous 58-58 Randy Bullock game tie where Randy Bullock was like my mortal enemy. Like, I searched Randy Bullock in my tweets, and good Lord, I would just tweet Randy Bullock like, you stupid fat fuck, like, make a field goal. Like, I was just vicious against Randy Bullock, and that and that was, and it's all because he had, I tied 58-58, and he scored -1 points. Like, if he just scored 0, I win. But actually, that was the best season I ever had. I didn't lose in the regular season after that. And I think I was like 10-2-1 and then naturally lost in the semifinals because I've never even been to a championship game. Cope. But that's about what I thought it would be. But, you know, I've had three straight above 500 years. So we're trending. I'm 3-1 right now. We're trending there.
We're getting there. This might be the best team Pat's ever put out, to be honest, from my perspective at least. How do I feel about coming up on win 100? I'm very nervous about the fact that it may not occur this week because I'm facing one of the better teams in our league. The core of his team is, actually, I think I could probably list off his whole roster from memory, is Lamar Jackson, DeAndre Swift, Kyren Williams, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb. Trying to remember his other run. Oh, Ramondre Stevenson, I think, is the one he's throwing out as his third running back this week. And then, it's a good team. It's a very good team, even in a non-PPR league. So we will see if I can pull out another win and go 5-0. I laugh because I think of before last year's draft, Pat, Brett asked me if I was going to get to 100 wins, and it would have required me to get 10 wins last year, which is a lot, but in a 13-game fantasy regular season, not to brag, it's not something I haven't done before, so I was like, yeah, I'll do it, and I proceeded to have my worst fantasy season in recent memory and go 5-8. So coming up here on win 100 this year, and we'll see if I can manage to finish the job. Shout out to Brett for keeping the spreadsheet, because this is very nice to look at, and I hope to continue my dominance over other league members for years to come. Pat, before we sign off, anything to say to the people?
No, but thank you. We did uncover that it was a batted ball that Geno Smith had his one reception for. So thank you to our detectives in the chat for giving us that information. As I would have rather gouged my eyes out with a melon baller than watch that game last night.
That game was a mess. I was mostly watching WWE Monday Night Raw instead of that game, although I do have a 2-TV setup that allows me to watch both 86-inch TV on top and then roughly a 50-inch TV below it. So we have quite the viewing experience here for football. But guys, that will do it for this episode of Off the Bench. Thank you for bearing with us through technical difficulties and such. Pat, I will let you say your little sign-off. So once I stop talking, I will unmute you to do so, because it's just our consistent way of signing this show off. But guys, again, thank you for listening. We'll be right back here next week. For Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.